Welcome to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere. Well, today we have sort of a couple of special things going on. We have Andrew Sindel from Metro New York North Chapter of the American Red Cross, and we're going to get very up-to-date information on everything that he has been doing in terms of being deployed because of Hurricane Laura. But more importantly than that, we have a song to sing for Andrew. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, my dear friend Andrew. Happy birthday to you. So welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What a special way to spend my birthday. Thank you. That was so sweet.
I was wondering if maybe you thought I was a little frosty when I said hello and jumped immediately into the show, but I didn't want to give it away.
Well, you had me fooled, so that was a good job. That was great. Thank you. That was really kind.
So, deployed for Hurricane Laura, tell us.
Yeah, so it's been, very interesting experience, as you could imagine, and I was able to take a little time out of this deployment to, you know, join you today on the call, which I'm very happy about. So, you know, with the hurricane, for folks that probably heard that, you know, went kind of right into Louisiana and the side of Texas, there was quite a bit of damage. But, you know, really not as much news coverage after it hit as we've heard in the past. And I think one of the reasons was it didn't hit, you know, directly in any major cities. So while it did hit in Louisiana, it was more towards the west part of the state, away from New Orleans and Baton Rouge and that area. But still over 1,500 homes completely destroyed, which is just devastating, and thousands of homes moderately to majorly damaged. So the devastation is, you know, definitely pretty severe.
So it could be 5,000 people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it did quite a bit of damage in a lot of areas of the state. They said power is going to be out for you know, possibly months. There's a lot of work to be done. So we have some people on the ground, of course, but we're also have kind of a new virtual response operation going on where people from their homes can still support the operation to assist clients.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, that is really such a benefit of all the technologies that are really being brought into play to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the folks like myself that are on the virtual side, you know, we're in constant communication through, like you said, technology with video, email, texting, you know, everything like that. So we can be in communication with folks who are on the ground. And we do have, you know, folks that are, of course, have to be in person for a lot of the work that we're doing to support clients. But some of the work that I'm focused on with a team of other staff and volunteers actually from around the country is to bring in volunteer support just for this disaster response. So these are trying to get local people from Louisiana who are maybe not affected by the hurricane and still want to support their neighbors and sure, can come help us give out emergency supplies, support clients at the hotels, actually. So the state of Louisiana is currently paying for folks to stay in hotels, but the Red Cross is the organization providing the meals for folks and all the other support currently.
So the hotels are outside of the area that has lost power.
Exactly. So the hotels right now are mostly actually in New Orleans. So people that evacuated, you know, had evacuated to the New Orleans area or the Baton Rouge area, exactly. So that's where everyone that, you know, lost their homes or were living in parishes, I guess they call them parishes, similar to counties, you know, in the Northeast, they are now, you know, staying in hotels and indefinitely. So, you know, this operation is just going to continue on for, you know, we really don't know how long, but we, as the Red Cross, are the ones that are providing the meals three times a day, bringing it to the hotels and giving it out to the clients, and then providing them mental health support, health services support, and then, of course, you know, helping them find out about, you know, the status of their homes and when they can go back to check on them.
And what happens, I mean, now it's September and schools have just recently opened. Will the public schools be able to absorb these families?
You know, that's a great question. I think a lot of the schools, because of COVID, are doing the kind of virtual remote learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there are some folks that, you know, if they do have access to a computer, yeah, the children are trying to still, you know, maintain correspondence with the school where they live. But a lot of those areas were so badly damaged that, you know, school is closed anyway for the time being until they can, you know, refacilitate the rebuilding of the schools and having classes resume. I know a lot of the colleges in the area that were affected also are doing virtual-only classes, and the ones that are having students return in person are kind of delaying the return, I know, until the end of September when things can hopefully, you know, power is back and things like that.
And in, I don't have the figures in front of me for the state of Louisiana, but I seem to recall that for a while Louisiana had some hot spots. I don't know if that's been rectified.
Yeah, so when it, you know, when it comes, and you're referring to the COVID numbers?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, that, yeah, exactly. There were some areas that had high numbers of COVID. So, you know, I think one of the most difficult parts of this disaster operation, and of course any disaster is always very difficult because of what just happened to residents, whether, you know, you're talking about major fires or floods or, you know, earthquakes, and there's a lot of damage. But of course, with the COVID on top of it, for our volunteers that are in the area, we are asking, of course, they have to, you know, have their masks, they have to, you know, keep their social distancing as much as they can, and there's temperatures that are well into the 100-degree area, so just the idea of, you know, having to wear that mask all day, you know, moving supplies, perhaps, or feeding clients that are coming to a feeding center is not easy, but...
Well, and also, just, you know, you go to take, you know, how, and you go into a place, you have to have your temperature taken. If you've been out with a mask on in 100-degree weather, of course you're going to have a higher temperature,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's yeah, absolutely.
So you
that's
can't
a great
get an
point.
Accurate read.
Yep, yep, and that's very difficult. So, yeah, a lot of the discussion, of course, for people on the ground is just kind of reiterating that, you know, for people to wear their masks, as difficult that is as it is. But, you know, as an organization, we have to really set an example that we're, you know, following those guidelines so that, you know, clients feel comfortable. But right now we are, thankfully, the residents are in hotels, so we have that non-congregate sheltering, which we have talked about, I know, on previous calls, that was kind of our hope, that people could be in hotels. But, you know, there may become a time when, you know, that funding runs out and we will have to open actual larger, you know, communal shelters, and so we are preparing if that does happen as well.
Wow, that's truly amazing. I mean, the outreach that American Red Cross makes is spectacular. Here, you know, we're talking about Louisiana, and we're in Connecticut. You know, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, we're really lucky. I would say we have about 15 or 20 people from our region, so that's, of course, New York City, Long Island, you know, Greenwich and Connecticut, and some of the counties in New York near Greenwich. About 15 to 20 folks responded in person, so we're willing to, you know, travel and follow those restrictions and are there in person. We probably also have about another 10 to 15 that are doing kind of the virtual response, you know, from their homes in many different lines of service. So, you know, we have people in both areas, both on the ground and virtually in different roles.
Which is wonderful. It makes such a difference, I think. You know, if you, I mean, I can't even imagine when we lost power recently. It was only for 3 days, and I was becoming, you know, very cranky. But months without power.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. I mean, of course, right. We remember recently when we had that large storm, and power was out for a couple days, up to a week for people, and how difficult that was. And then, yeah, these people could be months. And then, of course, those people that unfortunately don't even have a home to return to, really. You know, they're counting on the Red Cross to be able, to just provide, you know, that interim support for them so they could start working on, you know, how they're going to get back on their feet.
Do any of the insurance companies collaborate at all to try and be helpful when someone's home has been destroyed through a hurricane, or do they stay pretty far away from the whole thing?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends. I know in some communities, you know, certain types of insurance people had, but I know there are certain restrictions based on, you know, if people live in an area that's, you know, at sea level or, you know, their homes aren't to a certain height, they don't always get coverage. So I think, yeah, it's really a case-by-case basis on coverage, but I know you often hear that there's difficulties with people, I know, you know, working with their insurance companies after events such as this. So I know it's always a process, and then we'll eventually move into that phase where we can, you know, start doing the casework where we'll meet with families and kind of assess what their, you know, needs will be going forward.
Right. Didn't I think years ago, it was either Irene or Sandy, where we had a conversation about how even months and months later, the need for the American Red Cross to stay present to help, I think it was in, was it Staten Island, where there was so much damage? I can't remember.
Yeah, right, yeah. I think
yeah,
it was.
I do remember. Good for me.
Yeah, there was parts, I know, Staten Island and then right. The Rockaways as well in Queens
right.
were major long-term needs were there, absolutely, during Hurricane Sandy.
Is there any sort of forethought from the American Red Cross to maybe places that seem to get hit, like, for example, Louisiana, for, you know, the way you do here in Greenwich, you help people prepare and, you know, have your little bag pack and know your prescriptions and stuff like that, that at your Red Cross facilities there you make suggestions, or that's, you know, case by case?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of their the time down there, even more, you know, to an extent, even more than we do in the Northeast, is I think a lot of what they spend their time on, because they are so prone, like you said, to having these hurricanes happen, like in places like Louisiana and North Carolina and Florida, it's a lot of their resources are spent on that preparedness and those messages of, you know, having your stuff, because unfortunately people are used to having to actually evacuate, you know, on short notice because a storm is coming and can only, you know, take a certain amount of things with them during those evacuations. So I know they spend tons of time and a lot of actually the programming we do for children. I know we've talked about some of the preparedness programs we have for children. Those were developed in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, actually. That's kind of when they were first developed, because they saw such a need even back then.
Well, I hear my music, which means we need to take a break, and then we'll be back with Andrew Sindel from the American Red Cross Metro New York North Chapter. You're listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH 105.5 and WGCH.com anywhere. Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere. I'm so pleased to again say happy birthday to my friend Andrew Sindel, who is with the Metro New York North Chapter of the American Red Cross. Before we went to break, we were discussing how people from Connecticut and New York and the surrounding counties here in New York State have been helpful to the people of Louisiana all through the deployment managed by the American Red Cross. I wanted to ask what, Andrew, is going on in California with the wildfires now?
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's a great question. As people have probably heard, those have, you know, continued to really pick up in intensity, and you know, we have a very similar response in California going on right now that we do have in Louisiana, with also housing people in what we call the non-congregate sheltering, which is generally in hotels, and a very similar type of footprint of people both on the ground, really focusing on a couple things, the hotels or the sheltering of folks, and the feeding of folks, so, you know, providing food to the hotels for clients, and then also out into the field. We have, you know, vehicles that travel and provide meals to people who are cleaning up. And then the third area we focus on, and this is really in both operations, is what we call distribution of emergency supplies. So that is, we have fixed locations in communities where people can pick up cleaning kits, disinfectant, rakes, shovels, things for their homes if they are in an area, you know, where they're looking to clean out. So we have set locations, and we also have set points where we will set up, you know, for a day or two at, you know, a church parking lot or a school parking lot in a community, and have a distribution that we'll advertise to the community. So, you know, in California, that response is definitely ongoing as well, just like it is in Louisiana. And then there's a smaller response, but also in Texas, that also got hit by Hurricane Laura. There are some parts of Texas, there's a third response going on there. So, you know, right now there's these three pretty large, what we call level 7 operations, which is kind of the highest level that the Red Cross responds to, and that's usually the levels are decided based on how much, you know, financial support's going to be needed to sustain the operation. So this is at the highest level, just as California is. So, you know, we're always kind of watching other storms that are forming, and we get updates on that. You know, we, of course, remember a few years ago when we had the multiple hurricanes right around the same time.
Right.
At least it felt like, right, we almost had two or three that were within, you know, it felt like weeks of each other. So
yeah.
We're, you know, just kind of always preparing and trying to assess what our workforce capacity is, and that's why this, the recruiting we do all year round is so crucial, so we could support each other.
So, Andrew, tell us about the recruiting, how people, all the variety of things people can do and how they can do it to be recruited by American Red Cross.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just so people kind of have an idea of what people are doing in Louisiana, if they're interested, I can quickly kind of explain their role. You know, right now, my kind of department that I'm working with in Louisiana, we're focused on, like I said, bringing people in who aren't affiliated with the Red Cross but want to apply and help for this operation. So we look to different partner organizations in the area, corporate groups that we could bring in. We can do a training with them. A lot of it they're able to do online, and then we could bring them in to help us, you know, at a feeding location, so serve food to clients or help give out bulk items at a location. So locally, and we talked about this last month, we have this seasonal readiness campaign, and I've now really actually seen this in action because, of course, Louisiana was recruiting volunteers for the seasonal readiness campaign, and they had to really put them all into action as we speak, and that's to train people that can support if we do have a major storm like there is in Louisiana. We could have volunteers that can go into these shelters and have the training so they know, you know, what our COVID precautions are off the bat, and then what type of work it would be. So whether that's, you know, serving food to clients, providing emotional support, or giving out supplies, that's why we're looking to recruit people in our area so that we are prepared locally.
That's wonderful. And how would someone get in touch with you?
Yeah, so absolutely. So if anyone is interested in applying, especially for what we call our seasonal readiness kind of reserve corps, this is a group of folks that are willing to deploy within our region if there is a large storm for about 5 shifts. If we have a storm in our area, they could support about 5 shifts, which are generally about 8 to 12 hours to support us in a sheltering type of operation. The best way to do that, you can go to redcross.org/volunteer. And when you go there, you'll put in your zip code, and right on that main page, you'll see an area that says our greatest needs. And one of those areas you'll see, it's called the Seasonal Readiness kind of Reserve Corps, and that's a great way for people who want to give back, maybe don't have a lot of time. It's only about 2.5 hours of online training that's self-paced. You watch some videos, and there's some online courses. And then, you know, you join us on weekly, monthly calls to just kind of stay up to date, and then if we need you, we call you. So definitely the best way is to go to the website, redcross.org/volunteer, or you can always email me directly, and I'm happy to provide more information. We have information sessions that we also hold virtually so people can learn more about the opportunity. So my email is andrew.sindell, S-I-N-D-E-L-L, at redcross.org. And we have 2 sessions in September. Virtual. They're about an hour long where you can join us and learn more about what the role is and how you can apply, and then, of course, ask questions as well.
And if you've signed up for one thing and you start to really get sort of energized by the whole concept of being a volunteer for the Red Cross. Can you change, or are you committed to just do that one thing forever?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this kind of Reserve Corps, I think, is a great way for someone that kind of just wants to learn a little bit about what we do and not make that long-term commitment off the bat. But if you do enjoy the training and you do want to get involved more, absolutely, you can become a regular, what we call mass care volunteer, which would be a year-round person that would help us reach out to shelter locations to make agreements, talk to different vendors, to talk about, you know, if we need food delivery, you know, assist us if we had to make plans for shelters all year round. So there's definitely opportunities. You know, you can start with sort of a minimal time commitment type of opportunity, maybe help with a blood drive once a month. And then, of course, we have opportunities that would be more, you know, time critical, like being on call weekly, maybe helping our clients, you know, 1 or 2 days a week after a local disaster. So, yeah, there's absolutely the opportunity to kind of start in one area and explore different roles, take on additional roles, or if you take on roles and, you know, something in your life changes and your time changes, you know, you can always pull back and kind of just stay with a specific role. So we're happy to work that with you when we, you know, you come to
one
of our sessions.
You're very nimble in how you work with your volunteers to be sure everyone's getting the best outcome from the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to really match people up with something they're interested in. So depending on, you know, what someone's interest is, whether that's kind of a behind-the-scenes type of volunteer role, we have those. So some you can do from home for people right now that might be more comfortable not traveling out in public. And then people that are, you know, of course, willing to travel out in public to support a blood drive or meet with a client, you know, socially distanced, but in person, if we have a fire, things like that, we have those opportunities as well. So kind of both ends are available depending on what someone's interested in.
And speaking of blood drives, are there any local blood drives going on we should know about?
Yeah, absolutely. So coming up, and I have our schedule right here, in White Plains, actually on September 11th, which is actually one of our national days of service. People probably know in honor of kind of 9/11 and the World Trade Center attack. It's a day of service nationally, so a great way to kind of give back. You could give blood. So that's Friday, September 11th. It's at the Thomas H. Slater Center. That's 2 Fisher Court in White Plains. So again, Friday, September 11th, 2 Fisher Court in White Plains from 1 p.m. until 5 p.m. And then on the 12th, the Stanford Church of Christ, 1264 High Ridge Road, Saturday, September 12th, 7:45 a.m. until 1:15 p.m. And then finally on Monday, September 14th, from 12:30 p.m. until 5:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Stanford, which is right downtown. I believe it's 1101 Bedford Street in Stanford. So you can go to redcrossblood.org to make an appointment and learn about the donation process and kind of read about the need for blood and read some actual firsthand accounts of people that are receiving the blood products as well.
That's wonderful. You know, you hear a lot about this blood plasma. Is this something that is being, I know that it's used in the Red Cross for specific ways of dealing with blood, but is it being collected and given to pharma companies to figure out cure or vaccine?
Yeah, so I know there, you know, we have a lot of partnerships with different companies and different government agencies that are medical folks definitely work with closely to, you know, talk about vaccines. And I know there's been a lot of progress in people that, you know, had COVID and had the antibodies and kind of, you know, being able to provide that to people who are, you know, have the illness. I think there's been some promising results kind of in that process. So I know we work closely with a lot of government entities and companies as well to share those that information and best practices, especially in the areas where we do the testing of the blood and kind of do the research in that area. But I know we're playing a role in that, along with a lot of the other blood collection organizations throughout the country.
All excellent, excellent news from our birthday man, Andrew Sindel. I want to thank you so much, Andrew, for being here today, taking time of your special day. I hope you've got a good plan for eating some birthday cake this evening.
Absolutely, I do.
Good. All right. Thank you for the good news about all that the American Red Cross Metro New York North chapter is doing.
Sure. Thanks, Darby.
Thank you. You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 and WGCH.com anywhere.